This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The U.S. Justice Department is looking into allegations of corruption at the highest levels of international soccer. The FIFA indictments revealed last week 14 people accused of bribery, money laundering, and wire fraud. Several were top FIFA executives. One has ties to the Carolina RailHawks. So the soccer world was already wheeling when yesterday, through an interpreter, FIFA President Sepp Blatter said this.
I'd like to ask the executive committee to organize an extraordinary Congress as rapidly as possible to elect my successor.
Blatter is stepping down, and now it is clear that he is also the subject of a federal investigation. But how will this global scandal affect the most popular sport in the world? And can FIFA be trusted to reform its own system that has shown signs of corruption for decades? We'll try to answer those questions today, and we're going to start with Matt Bonesteel. He's been following the story for The Washington Post and joins us now. Hello, Matt.
Hi.
Let's start with the latest news. Sepp Blatter, you know, until recently reelected and sounding very confident about staying in office and suddenly an about face. Why?
Well, it hasn't really come out why yet. All we've been able to do is speculate. And now today or early this morning or actually yesterday, it was revealed that the FBI is indeed looking into Blatter, which may have had something to do with why he made a rather sudden announcement yesterday.
What are they looking into? Do we know about the substance of that investigation into Blatter himself?
I don't think anyone has quite the specifics yet. It seems like it must have to do with, you know, the main gist of why the 14 people were indicted last week, of bribery, money laundering, racketeering, things like that.
Well, let's get into some of those allegations. What are these allegations? Who is alleged to have been bribed and doing the bribing? And what were they expecting to get in return?
Well, a lot of the charges stem from people associated with soccer in the governing body of soccer in North America and Central America, specifically regarding, you know, money exchanged for positive World Cup votes and money exchanged for television rights under the table or otherwise. And a lot of what the FBI and the Department of Justice are looking into are things of that nature.
Right, and we might never have known about, well, we might have known about this, but there might never have been a federal investigation into all of this were it not for a man named Chuck Blazer. Tell us about him.
Well, Chuck Blazer used to be a high-ranking U.S. soccer official who, before soccer really took off, was sort of the driving force behind soccer as it related to FIFA in this country. And it is alleged that Blazer threw his boss in CONCACAF, which is the world the governing body in this area, it took money in exchange for World Cup votes. And then a couple years ago, he pleaded guilty and started talking with investigators about all of this. So he is seen as the contact person for the Department of Justice in all this.
All right. So then it all begins to unravel. When Sepp Blatter stepped down, he referred to structural problems at FIFA. You wrote this morning in a blog post about some of the things that might be fixed. Talk about the structure of FIFA and how that might contribute to many of the allegations that we're reading about these days.
Well, there are three levels of governance in FIFA. There's the president. There is a 23-member executive committee, which, for instance, makes a lot of the decisions for FIFA, most importantly, where the World Cup will be played. And then there's the FIFA Congress, which sort of deals with all the FIFA's governing issues and elects the president. And that is made up of 209 members, with each soccer-playing nation getting one vote.
And this one country, one vote process of theirs is seen by many, including you in your blog post today, as a big part of the problem. Explain why that would be a problem.
Well, what you have is the very small soccer-playing countries who you would never think of as soccer powers, you know, people with 35,000 people in their countries itself. They have the same amount of power to elect the president as the bigger soccer-playing countries like, say, Germany, like Spain, like Argentina and Brazil. So it is thought that they have undue power where their vote counts as much as a country like Germany's, and that means that people like Sepp Blatter could give them thousands, millions of dollars in so-called soccer-related development in exchange, whether that's, you know, on the level or not, for, you know, to keep Blatter in power.
Right, and it just takes fewer dollars to influence a smaller country like that, and you start adding them up, and if it's one country, one vote, you get to a lot of votes quickly. Also point out that while one country, one vote sounds very fair and democratic, those smaller countries don't contribute to soccer in the same way that some of the larger countries or even continents do.
No, I mean, these countries don't register at all on the world soccer map. And so they have an undue amount of power, at least compared to, you know, countries like South America, where there aren't that many countries in South America, yet they produce a lot of soccer players, and they have a lot of TV viewers who will watch these games, especially the World Cup. So you have a lot of people who aren't necessarily soccer powers making a lot of these decisions.
We talked about the fact that these allegations have been swirling around in the world of soccer for a long, long time. They're not terribly surprising to a lot of people. But what about the investigation? What impact has that had on soccer fans? What impact might it have on the game?
Well, I think there's a feeling of it's about time someone held these people to task. And it is sort of strange that in the United States, soccer is not exactly. It's growing in popularity and has been for a long time, but it's not football, it's not basketball, it's not baseball. So that it took U.S. prosecutors to institute this change has been met with is a little bit of a surprise, actually.
Well, why is the United States Justice Department involved in this? And interestingly enough, maybe I missed it, but I don't see that any public officials here or anywhere else are involved in this scheme. So it's all kind of inside soccer, in a way, where this corruption has taken place. And yet now you have the full weight of the U.S. Justice Department investigating this.
Well, their thought is these are allegations or violations that took place with U.S. money on U.S. soil. So that the Justice Department sees that and say, well, we're going to get involved with this because if you do that, you have to follow our rules. So,
When will we expect a new president for FIFA? Sepp Blatter has announced his resignation, but he's not leaving yet, right?
Yes, they're going to call another Congress, an extraordinary Congress, he called it yesterday. I believe FIFA rules state that the members must be given 4 months before this Congress is called, 4 months notice. So, I mean, at the earliest, it will probably be in the fall sometime, and it could go early next year. I think I saw a time frame of September through April or September through March as a possibility for when this will actually happen.
So the investigation will continue, the prosecutions, and we expect some trials. That's what happens at the legal level here in the United States, but it's still at this moment, right, up to FIFA to reform itself. What are the prospects for that, and how do you see that going?
Well, even Blatter himself, when he announced his resignation, he owned up to the fact that FIFA needs massive structural change. And, it'll depend greatly on who becomes the next president and what ideas this guy or woman has, and whether the FIFA members actually buy into this or, I would imagine a lot of them, especially the smaller countries, are happy with the status quo because they're still getting a lot of money without having to produce much in the way of actual soccer. So,
I mean, they could easily say, okay, those guys are gone. Thank goodness those rotten apples are out of our barrel. Now let's continue business as usual, right?
They could do that. They could do that. But I think there's so much scrutiny on FIFA now that I think anyone who comes in there and wants to be the next FIFA president is going to have to say, look, here's what I think needs to change and here's how we're going to do it.
What about the game itself? Obviously, the world's most popular game. How does this scandal? I mean, you talked about a sense of relief on the part of fans. Finally, it's about time. But what about the impact in the short run and in the long run? World Cup, does it affect the support that this game has? The way people support it now?
I don't think it will. I think people are still going to watch the games because they know, none of the scandal is actually affecting the quality of play. I mean, they're not changing the size of the field, they're not changing the size of the ball or the number of players on the ball. This is really at an administrative level. So I think soccer will continue to be the popular sport it always has been. And I think now with perhaps more transparency, which hopefully will be one of the goals of any sort of reform, more fans will follow along and say, well, this is completely on the level.
Certainly casts a shadow, though, on the 2018 and 2022 World Cup bids in terms of location. What effect is that, do you think?
It does. The speculation is that the 2018 World Cup is going to be held in Russia, and I think The speculation is that it's too late to change that. That, you know, the qualifying for that World Cup, I think, starts relatively soon, maybe in the fall. So for to change that, and, you know, it seems like it's a long way away. It's 3 years. But really, there's so much qualification that goes on with that, with these World Cups, that they really need to set the schedule far ahead of time. As for 2022 in Qatar, that, I mean, one would think FIFA has to think long and hard about doing this. It's a country with very inhospitable weather conditions and zero soccer tradition, and their human rights record is far from good. So one would think anyone who comes in with an idea to change FIFA will have to think long and hard about perhaps, you know, doing something about the 2022 World Cup, whether that means holding the vote again or just simply taking it away and giving it to another country.
All right, Matt, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Matt Bonesteel, a sports reporter for The Washington Post. We're going to continue our conversation about corruption in the international soccer organization known as FIFA. The conversation is just ahead on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Today, talking about corruption in international soccer. FIFA President Sepp Blatter surprised fans across the soccer world yesterday when he said he'd step down. More than a dozen other people under investigation for alleged bribery, money laundering, and wire fraud. Many have suspected such activity within FIFA for decades. If the allegations are true, how did it go on for so long? The answer might lie within the politics, business, and culture of soccer, particularly professional soccer. My next three guests have backgrounds in those areas. Joshua Nadel's a professor of Latin American and Caribbean history at North Carolina Central University, the author of Football, Why Soccer Matters in Latin America. Josh, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me again.
Also, Deborah Stroman, a professor of sports business at UNC Chapel Hill's Kenan Flagler Business School. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you.
And Lorraine Dubois, professor of history and romance studies at Duke University, who's written many publications about soccer, including the book Soccer Empire, the World Cup, and the Future of France. Welcome back, Lorraine.
Thank you.
Deborah Stroman, let me ask you first, how is a sports marketing organization like FIFA different from other sports associations and other maybe professional sports leagues?
Well, I'll start off by saying the structure is very unique in the sense that there is so much power in one person. Being able to mandate, legislate, affect, distribute dollars, all of that, that is the structure of FIFA. And so when you have something like this happen, most people just turn to that one person. His reach was very, very extensive all across the world. He's done a number of things to help the world of soccer or football. In particular, he's done things to bring in non-European countries, in particular Chile, Argentina, and South Africa. And so those relationships have very much helped him through all of the things that he's done to increase the number of members at FIFA and also some of his, I guess you could say, charitable or non-soccer involvement. Things like anti-doping, the fight against child labor, Ebola education. So all of this is wrapped up into one person.
And how much of that is precisely because of the structure? In other words, the speed with which it's organized and brought in and, you know, it becomes such a broad-based organization. How much of that is precisely because it's a one-person organization?
Well, now we're talking about the different types of ways that you can organize a business or an organization. And so I look at parallels of the NFL and what Roger Goodell is going through in terms of his challenges. You know, oftentimes people say that Goodell is the jury, judge, and the executioner. And similar for the president of FIFA, you have that type of control, that type of power. I would venture to say, though, it isn't necessarily the structure, but it's the dollars. When you bring in great amounts of money, there is just the seed for some type of exploitation or commercialization or going against your original mission. So the structure in itself, I don't say that is very negative. I would look at the structure plus the amount of money that flows through FIFA.
Joshua Nadel, did this investigation, the indictments, I mean, again, we're saying in some ways no surprise that this is happening, but the investigation, the fact that now there are indictments, is that surprising to you?
I think it is quite surprising on one hand. You know, FIFA, we have known for, or we have suspected for quite some time that FIFA is an incredibly corrupt organization. You know, going back, I mean, Andrew Jennings has been reporting on it for years, but going back to ethics investigations a couple of years ago, certainly we knew that things were dirty inside FIFA. So it's not surprising on one hand, but it is surprising that someone finally acted on those suspicions.
Laurent Dubois, tell us about the origins of FIFA. When did this, how did it begin and how did it evolve?
Well, so this is an organization that emerges in the early 20th century. I mean, it kind of really crystallizes around the World Cup starting in 1930. And that first generation of visionaries who set up this organization had this idea of that soccer, that football would be this global sport, kind of bringing peoples together. This is the generation after World War I that hosts that first World Cup. The organization really is very Euro-centered. It's kind of European, South American for the first several decades. And it's really starting in the 70s and 80s with João Havelange as president that a kind of new nexus emerges where the media, the incredible new sort of money that's coming in through the media dollars as well as endorsements begins to transform an organization that had been in some ways relatively small and contained into this kind of conglomerate that's at once international organization, corporation, you know, kind of strange monster in a certain way. And that's really where we need to look at. I mean, the corruption is really about the relationship between media and the organization.
And Deborah, that's really where it's different here in the sense that you have other nearly monolithic organizations, NBA, you know, NFL, they make their own rules, they're their own league, but they have outside media interests that they have to contend with, write contracts with, negotiate with. And here it's really all under one roof, as I understand it. Am I right, Deborah?
That's exactly right. And so you really don't have that wall or that informal barrier where you have various interests that have to compete, have to collaborate, but instead you just have this one controlling body, which is the president of FIFA, who's able to basically put into place things that work for the betterment of his particular interests. And so everyone is hopeful that indeed he is going to take care of all 209 member institutions or associations, certainly the conferences, and try to do right by everyone. But clearly there is his work over the past number of years has been to empower certain countries at the expense of others and using money as that tool.
Well, but you also study organizational behavior, Deborah Stroman, and you've talked about the impact of money. But what about the structure? Or does it mean that members are essentially bound to be corrupt because of the way the organization is organized?
Well, now we're really talking about an ethical issue and also understanding the nature of the presidency, where once you dole out these dollars, which are just such a big part of a small country's income or revenues or how you develop football across the world. Just think how powerful it is if you are a small country and all of a sudden you have millions of dollars to have a brand new office, some new soccer fields, to invest in some other programs. And now you're on the world stage with major countries like England or Germany. So it's very, very, I guess, appealing to get in the pocket, so to speak, or get in the good graces of the FIFA president. And unfortunately, the way the allegations are stated right now, that indeed is what happened. And so it's going to be really interesting to see with the new FIFA leadership where this goes. You have a strong a number of countries that will say this is possibly America bullying us and partnering with some other major countries in the sense of size.
Well,
will they all gather together?
Now, let me ask you, this is the sort of political question. Josh Nadel, I'll start with you. The smaller countries we're talking about mostly reside in Africa. We talked about a Eurocentric South American European league to begin with. Is it going to look like we're picking on the smaller countries in Africa if we try to clean this up?
You know, on one hand, I would say, you know, typically the United States is seen when the United States takes an action like this sort of and become sort of a world police, it tends to be seen as a bully or somewhat negatively. I mean, I think that in reality right now, the soccer world is sort of all somewhat giddy about this action. All right. I mean, there are certainly going to be people in African nations, in Caribbean nations, in South American nations, in Europe that are unhappy with this because of their ties to Sepp Blatter. But by and large, this has been met sort of with approval. I think that one thing to go back, I mean, one to the question of sort of media, and if I may, to go back to the question of media and FIFA, I mean, I think one of the really odd things about FIFA and the media is that, you know, if you look at the indictment and the allegations, most of the people who were involved in CONCACAF were actually also sports marketing executives first, right? So this was a case where, if you want to take an analogy with the United States, it would be like saying, you know, ESPN actually is on the board of the NFL, right? And that's the analogy that I would make, you know, that the media marketing people are actually, while they're supposed to be collaborating with, they're actually and collaborating in a, you know, and competing with each other. They're actually in bed with the executive.
Yeah, Lauren.
Yeah, I think it's important to kind of disentangle a number of things, right? So there's, I mean, FIFA does give money to all of the members' nations. I think $250,000 a year goes back from the general fund. And that does go further in some countries than others. That's sort of part of the structuring. And in a lot of ways, for people, I actually think that that kind of general development of soccer globally is a positive thing, right? So there's that aspect. Whether we think of that as corruption, it's certainly a kind of patronage system in a certain way, and it helps people get reelected. The real talk, the stuff we're talking about here, is people who are at the center of the organization and who acted in this kind of form of collusion with the media interests. And that's where the really big money was. And there's, of course, people like Jack Warner who really took advantage of that. I think the other thing, though, is to just go back to think about what should FIFA be in the world, right? The idea is this is an organization that is supposed to support the sport, which they do not own. And this is a kind of common human good, right? The most popular sport on the planet. They have acted in certain ways that it's kind of their product to kind of package and sell. And that's true of other sports as well. But I think that's the kind of ethical dimension and the contradiction between the idea that this is in some ways a sport of connectivity, right, and sharing across the planet. And then the fact that this kind of corruption is happening around that and selling it and marketing it, I think, is what gets to people. And
Josh, you say maybe this connection began or was at least firmed up at the 1970 World Cup.
Sure. In Mexico, the head of the Mexican Soccer Federation, who brought the World Cup to Mexico in 1970, was also the owner of Televisa and also sat on the executive committee of FIFA. So it was, I'm not sure that was the first moment, but it certainly was a moment at which that's crystallized. Guillermo Cañedo was sort of, you know, a media mogul and involved with FIFA. And that really sort of steps up the game quite a bit. And I think that with the election of João Havelange and his promise to expand the World Cup, and sort of his understanding that the growth of soccer was going to be outside of Europe and the Americas. That's really sort of that is the nexus where this all began.
Well, Deborah Stroman, again, getting back to this idea that, you know, you have this structure that accumulates a lot of power in very few hands. And then Lauren Dubois' point that this is the world's game and FIFA is, you know, sort of packaging it and marketing it to the world. Can we disentangle those? Would it be the game it was today if it hadn't been marketed and had the kind of media attention in the hands of empire builders like Sepp Blatter and the others who were in executive control?
I would venture to say no. I think what under his leadership and others, it was critical to get football, world football, to where it is today. And I think the ability to go and travel to all of these countries to increase the tournament now, and certainly what he's done and other leaders within FIFA to increase women's soccer as well, it has been nothing short of amazing. And now that we have the United States and England and Germany and Australia and other countries that I'm not sure, but I would say that quite possibly with so much of this empowerment of the non-Euro or United States, that is part of the issue and the way it was done by the passing of the dollars very freely and very boldly.
through American banks, which we're told is the reason the United States is involved. But really, why does the United States Justice Department throw its full weight behind this? Look, here's the thing. There is not a drop of oil that gets extracted from Africa, not a single strategic mineral that's taken from the ground there that didn't somehow have to do with a bribe, that didn't somehow pass through an American bank. I don't see any arrests. So my question is, why does the United States Justice Department get involved in soccer, for goodness sake, of all things?
Well, that's a great question. A lot of people are asking that as well. The effort that it took to develop this case and certainly come down with the indictments, when certainly we have a number of issues within our own country, in particular what's happening on in Wall Street and banking. Why don't we have that same attention? So what we can clearly, I think we would all agree on, that this is the politics of America taking place, and also with an asterisk, I'll say racism as well.
Racism in what way?
Well, in the sense that the empowerment of the Latin American countries, the African continent, and now what does it look like on the surface in terms of what is happening?
I would agree.
I mean, I do think a bigger scale of thinking about this. This is really a lot about kind of decolonization, the post-colonial world. The,
yes.
The growth of FIFA in the 70s and 80s is essentially the new nations, right, in kind of Africa and Caribbean and Latin American nations getting involved too, Asia as well. Those are the sort of new centers of power. And it's all linked too to the way that professional soccer works, in which you have this kind of drawing of these players from these regions into the Central European leagues. So we do have to see this all as a bigger picture. And it is really interesting to see the U.S. kind of intervening so powerfully in this story, which is a very global story.
Particularly with so few U.S. interests involved. You talked about the example you used, what if ESPN was on the board? Looks like ESPN isn't involved in this. Looks like Time Warner Cable isn't involved in any of this. Therefore, they won't be hurt. Other media organizations will, which is two things. American interests aren't necessarily hurt by the investigation. And if you make a level playing field, they may have an opportunity where they didn't have that before.
Well, they are getting – I mean, so the way that Fox is covering the Women's World Cup is kind of unprecedented, right? So we're going to see in the next month a kind of unprecedented level of attention to women's soccer. There was this great tweet that came through about a day or two from Nathan Edwards, who has kind of the scene, America drunk, I'm gonna arrest soccer, friend. You can't arrest soccer. Hey, the hell I can't, right? So there is this kind of vision that this is sort of this amusing process.
We could do anything we want. But I would like to go back. I mean, I think that the question of sort of Europe there's a number of people who have suggested that the way to clean up FIFA is by somehow reducing the impact of the small nations and reducing the input of the small nations in elections. And that strikes me as sort of, I don't know. I mean, everybody's calling Sepp Blatter a dictator, an autocrat, whatever. But if we actually reduce but he was democratically elected. And he won that election by appealing to the smaller constituencies, right? It doesn't strike me that the United States or Europe is any less corrupt when it comes to soccer than anywhere else in the world. So I'm not sure that giving Germany and England and Sweden, the United States, more power is necessarily going to clean up the game. And I think that what's fascinating, if you read Prince Ali's sort of platform for the election, he actually suggested increasing the amount of money given to every federation from $250,000 to $1 million a year. So he certainly is not looking to diminish the amount of money going to the small countries.
Prince Ali, who lost the election to Sepp Blatter.
Well, and it is important. I mean, the idea here, right, is that FIFA is, in principle, right, FIFA gets money by selling the rights, and then that money should go to the countries in FIFA. I mean, that is a sort of that's the idea, is a redistributive idea. And I think it's going to be really important to look at all this really clearly and lucidly to see what needs to be kept and what needs to be changed.
We didn't talk about the local element in this. Aaron Davidson, of course, part owner of the Carolina Railhawks, is involved in this. The investigation. I guess the bigger question, though, is what impact do you think it'll have? Let's just talk about soccer in the U.S., the scandal itself. Deborah, let me start with you.
Well, I look at the growth of soccer in America in two ways. The first, the actual player performance, the technical skills. I would say that our success is more limited, the potential in that regard. Talking to some friends who've actually played and who are from other countries, they state that there are a number of concerns with how we play the game, everything from our coaching to how we pass the ball in small areas. I am more hopeful in terms of the spectator interest. There is no doubt that ESPN, ESPN Deportes, the commitment to show the game from other countries has definitely helped us learn the game and be more appreciative of the major skill. I'm always amazed over these past 2 years talking to my students about what are your favorite sports. And more I'm hearing students say that they have their favorite team is actually a soccer club, you know, based overseas somewhere else. It's not necessarily, you know, the Minnesota Vikings or the New York Yankees.
Right.
And they pull out their smartphone and they look at how they're tracking their favorite players. And so, again, two sides, the technical side and how we develop and play nationally and worldwide, and then how we are growing as spectators. And I'm more hopeful on the spectator side.
Josh Nadel?
I would say that the impact is going to be pretty minimal. I think, if anything, it's, you know, it's not going to affect viewership. I think it might affect the attitude of U.S. fans who say, you know, our soccer is different and now we've cleaned up soccer, too.
All right.
I mean, I think the critical thing will be for us to think about how our federation operates, notably giving maybe equal support to women's soccer, which has been huge in the United States. And there are things we can take up with the federation here now.
Lorraine Dubois at Duke, Josh Nadel at NC Central, and Deborah Stroman at UNC Chapel Hill. Thank all of you. Just ahead, an exhibit at the Durham History Hub sheds light on the origins of the Bull City. Find out about it in a minute. Stay tuned.